You for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded June 18th, 2025. Well, Iran is under attack, just as in Palestine, Lebanon, Syria, and Yemen. The people of that ancient land are now under the bombs and rockets of Israel and its Western accomplices. We've seen the modus operandi repeated: destruction of vital civilian institutions and infrastructure, targeting and murder of the professional class, whether at work or at home. The criminality of this monstrous assault is beyond question, the actions of the assailants indefensible, and yet it continues day after day, city after city, crime after bloody crime. Dan Kovalik is a lawyer, educator, labor, peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author, and filmmaker. Over the last several months, Dan has been in Syria and Lebanon, countries now hardly recognizable, and before that, he visited Iran too, all to see firsthand who the people behind the Western propaganda curtain really are, and to bring their stories home to America. Dan's book titles include Cancel This Book, The Progressive Case Against Cancel Culture, No More War, How the West Violates International Law by Using Humanitarian Intervention to Advance Economic and Strategic Interests, The Case for Palestine, Why It Matters and Why You Should Care, and The Plot to Attack Iran, How the CIA and the Deep State Have Conspired to Vilify Iran. Dan Kovalik in the first half. And though less than the horrors inflicted upon the women, men, and children of West Asia, there is fear and brutality being visited against refugees, immigrants, both documented and otherwise, and the American citizens defending the rights and liberties guaranteed until recently by the U.S. Constitution. They're discovering the hard way this Trump administration holds the laws of its own land in the same contempt as those of the rest of the world. Andy Worthington's an English journalist, activist, author, photo historian, filmmaker, musician, songwriter, and principal of the Four Fathers Band. Andy is too a co-founder of the ongoing Close Guantanamo campaign. His book titles include The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 774 detainees in America's illegal prison, Stonehenge, Celebration and Subversion, and The Battle of the Beanfield. Andy's articles appear at andyworthington.co.uk, where I found his latest, The Alarming Kafkaesque Basis of Trump's War on Migrants. Andy Worthington asking not for whom America's bell tolls in the second half, but first, Dan Kovalik and the plot against Iran revealed in real time. Welcome back to the show, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, it's always my pleasure and honor, Dan. Dan, these wars, to some degree, depend on the tacit acceptance of Americans and Canadians and the rest of the citizens of the Western Bloc nations. That acquiescence requires entertaining distractions be provided and enormous amounts of propaganda disseminated. Dan, you've been to these places. These places that have been vilified, as the title of your book describes, can you describe what you discovered there?
Yeah, so I was in Iran in 2017. I spent some time in the capital, Tehran, and also Isfahan, which is an ancient city. And first of all, what you find is Iranians are not anti-American. They actually love Americans. Many Iranians speak English and are happy to speak English to foreigners. Also, women, you know, while there's a lot of propaganda about women being mistreated in Iran, in truth, in the region, it's probably one of the best places to be a woman. There's a lot of women scientists. There's women in the parliament. There's women firefighter units. Women are very well educated there, you know. And again, that's something that's not, I think, fairly portrayed in the media. I mean, the other thing is it's a very pluralistic society. While it does have, it has a mixed government. It has a secular government with an elected secular president, an elected secular parliament. Alongside that, you do have the theocratic government led by the Ayatollah, who's, of course, Islamic, and it's called the Islamic Republic of Iran. However, people are free to practice different religions. In Iran, people practice Christianity. I went to a number of Christian churches that are operating. Iran has the second largest Jewish population in the Middle East. I think there's 25,000 Jews who live there. Again, they're free to practice. I've actually visited a synagogue in Isfahan. And what keyed me off to visit it is we went to a market in Isfahan, and one of the vendors had a yarmulke. And I said, "Oh, are you Jewish?" And he said, "Oh, yeah." And I said, "How are you doing here?" "Oh, I'm great." And he said, "My synagogue's down the street," which we found. There's a Jewish hospital in Tehran, which gets government funding. In fact, President Ahmadinejad, who was very much vilified by the U.S. press, was responsible for donating millions of dollars to that hospital. Again, these are things you don't hear about. And in fact, the head of the Jewish community in Iran has publicly denounced Israel's attacks on his country. So in any case, again, when you compare Iran to a Saudi Arabia, which the U.S. views as one of its closest allies, or really any of the Gulf states, if you compare it, frankly, even to Israel, which is not, you know, which is a theocracy, right, and which is not tolerant of other religions and other peoples, Iran looks pretty good. It's not perfect. It's got problems like any country, but, you know, I think there's a lot of good to be said about it.
Well, I read a disturbing article just recently that that plurality that you described, there's Armenians, Azeris, Jews, Kurds, and Persian majority, and others too, all making up this mosaic that is modern day Iran, but that is the very weakness that outside forces are trying to manipulate even now to fracture the country, turn it into another Iraq, perhaps, with different sections, religious and ethnic, fighting one another to the detriment of the whole country, so that, of course, as usual, the corporations of the West can profit by it.
Yeah, well, I think even the more apt comparison would be Syria, where the West has recently done that, where you have Syria, which has been for centuries a multi-religious, multi-ethnic state, and the West supported al-Qaeda to take power there, which they have. And they are persecuting religious minorities, including and especially Islamic groups, the Alawites, who they view to be apostates. They're actually murdering them, kidnapping Alawite women and girls, forcing them into sexual slavery, and really destroying the tapestry of Syria, also repressing Christianity. Of course, Syria is a very important historical place for Christianity, right? The St. Paul got his conversion on the way to Damascus. Many of the disciples of Jesus spent time in Syria. Actually, Syria houses the head of St. John the Baptist. I think uncertain where it is now after this new government took power. But in any case, you also have some of the most ancient Christian churches there. I was at a Christian church in Homs, Syria, that was founded in 69 AD. It was one of the oldest churches in the world. And again, it prospered under the Syrian government of the Assads, in truth. And now various churches are being attacked by people associated with the new government. So that's what Iran has to look forward to if the regime change that the West plans for it is successful. And we have to remember, of course, Chris, as you very well know, there was a regime change in 1953 that the U.S. spearheaded upon the request of Great Britain, where they overthrew a secular, democratically prime minister and installed a monarchy, the Shah of Iran. And that's really what's led to the problems we have today. The Islamic State that grew, Islamic Republic which grew out of the revolution of 1979. It grew out of the people's opposition to the Shah and his brutality, right? So people need to know their history. And by the way, and I just finished another article that's going to be up soon. I end it with the following. You know, you may think that that's ancient history, but the son of the Shah has now reemerged, and he's, you know, he's been given platforms like on Bloomberg News, and he's planning a return if the government is overturned. So, you know, you'll have another monarchy. So, you know, this is the reality of Western regime change.
Yeah, of course, they're warming up the peacock throne, and the brutality of the Shah of Iran led to the revolution in 79. Mossadegh was overthrown.
Yes, Mossadegh, again, was a secular, democratic, small-d democratic prime minister. Yeah, his great sin was to nationalize British oil concerns. The British were controlling Iran's oil and profiting from it, while the vast majority of Iranians were very, very poor. He nationalized it, but he actually offered compensation for it. He was willing to pay for it, and actually believed that Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, could help mediate that. But instead, Eisenhower, who was at first reluctant to engage in the overthrow, was convinced by the Dulles brothers, who were the head of the CIA and State Department, respectively, and who both had interests in British petroleum interests there. He decided to support that coup under the because he was convinced by the Dulles brothers, who lied to him that somehow Mossadegh was a communist and needed to be overthrown for that reason, which was not at all true. But in any case, yes, then the CIA, which helped to bring about the coup, set up the SAVAK, which was the Iranian state security forces, trained them in Nazi torture techniques. And the Shah ruled an iron hand, with an iron hand, through the SAVAK until his overthrow in 1979. In 1978, the year before the Shah was overthrown, Amnesty International concluded that Iran had the very worst human rights in the world. And that's who the U.S. was backing. So,
well, you mentioned Ahmadinejad, the former president, and how he was, his name was traduced in the Western press, and he was the subject of a severe and ongoing propaganda campaign here. The current supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, now, a location that he was believed to be at was bombed. That's news that is just coming in. I don't know if he was there or if it's even true. But what is certain is that he is being bombed in the Western media. I just did a search on his name and news trying to find out about this perhaps assassination attempt. And I come up with all kinds of stuff, but they're echoing the same thing. And that is that he is a, quote, ruthless defender of Iran's revolution. That's a bad thing. That is from the lefty Guardian, picked up by France 24, who says that they've backed into a corner Iran's ruthless leader. Now he's getting a little less of a defender and just plain old ruthless. And it goes on and on. But if you take a look, it's emanating firstly from the Times of Israel through the Times of New York. How necessary is this kind of framing?
Yeah, well, it is necessary from the point of view of those who want to overthrow the current government. Those, you know, the Ayatollah has to be vilified. First of all, you know, when I was in Tehran, I went to the former headquarters of the SAVAK, which is now a museum. And there's actually a wax figure of Ayatollah Khamenei, the current supreme leader of Iran, in a jail cell there, because he was, in fact, held in jail and tortured as a young man. You know, so first of all, one has to, and that was under, of course, the U.S.-backed Shah. In many ways, I see the current supreme leader as actually a quite humane individual. Every Christmas he meets with Christians that kind of, you know, extend the olive branch to Christians within his country. I think the government has a lot of interest in helping the poor. In the Christian faith or Catholic faith, there's something known as liberation theology, which takes a preferential treatment for the poor. Well, the Islamic Republic also practices Islamic liberation theology and has a preferential treatment for the poor and the oppressed. Compare how he lives pretty modestly to the Shah, who lived in a palace, again, now a museum, a golden palace, and you can see all the wealth that the Shah had amassed. It's not to say, again, that the government's perfect, that they don't engage in some repression, but, you know, one has to see the repression is stemming from the many years' attempts to overthrow the government there, right? I mean, as they say, even paranoids have enemies, you know, and what's very clear now is that a number of the attacks, the initial attacks against Iran from Israel took place within Iran because they had assets there. They had Mossad agents in Iran. There's a lot of penetration into Iran by the West. And it says two things. One, that the government has a legitimate concern about state security. But two, that it's not so repressive that they can even prevent all that, right? So in any case, I think it's, you know, that there's a lot of propaganda regarding him. And again, if you compare that state to Saudi Arabia, I think Iran looks pretty good in truth.
Well, and also Khamenei he's depicted as strictly a political figure in the Western media, where that's not the case. He is, as Laith Maruf of Free Palestine TV points out, the, quote, highest religious authority in Shia Islam, representing over 600 million people worldwide. And this he mentions in the context of the president of the United States, Donald Trump, and the prime minister of Israel are both threatening to assassinate him.
Yeah, no, it would be like Trump saying you're going to assassinate the Pope, right? He kind of serves that role for Shia Muslims in the world. And by the way, it's illegal under U.S. law to go to for the U.S. to assassinate foreign leaders, right? The CIA, when that was exposed, they were doing it in the 1970s when that was exposed by the U.S. Senate hearing, it was made clear that they're not supposed to be out assassinating people, you know. And it's quite troubling, yeah, that you have the president of the United States suggesting that we may kill the supreme leader of Iran.
As well as every single living soul in Tehran, by the sounds
in
of it.
In Tehran, yeah. They say I think Trump said something about setting Iran on fire, or someone did.
Trump tweeted, was it just yesterday? Time is becoming compressed here, but that everyone should leave immediately, leave Tehran immediately. The millions, yes, upon millions. This is a mega city, one of the world's largest. And he says everyone should leave right now, insinuating, although tacitly, that the city would be destroyed.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I mean, there's no way for them to even, safely evacuate all those millions of people. It's absurd. Basically what he's doing is he's threatening genocide, right? I mean, he's threatening to wipe out millions of people. And he does so cavalierly. Mm-hmm. You know, by the way, he's not the only one. Hillary Clinton had made, you know, threats like that before as well. And others have. For the U.S. officials, it's very easy for them to threaten these types of things. And again, the U.S. has a long history of actually carrying through those threats, you know, destroying Hiroshima and Nagasaki and Dresden, Germany during World War II, carpet bombing countries like Korea and Vietnam. I mean, this is part and parcel of what the U.S. does. I mean, that it's a sad fact, but it's true. And I think, sadly, a lot of people in the West have become a bit inured to it because it happened with such great frequency. But, you know, you talk about Tehran, you know, Iran, I believe, maybe one of the, if not the oldest continuous nations in the world, right? They're I believe, the only country in the Middle East that has continued as a nation. It's never been colonized, as almost every other part of the Middle East has been at one time or another. You're talking about destroying an ancient civilization if you go through with what Trump and Netanyahu and others are threatening. I mean, how can people live with that, you know? And again, the other irony is, oh, we care so much about women in Iran. Well, guess who's going to die? Women and children.
As so, in the other places. Well, the American effort in Iraq was the same thing, destroying and looting priceless artifacts and destroying the cultural history of the place, which seems to be a primary target. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Dan Kovalik. Dan's a lawyer, educator, labor, peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author and filmmaker. Over the last months, he's been in Syria and Lebanon, countries we can hardly recognize today. And we've been speaking about his 2017 visit to Iran. That was followed by his 2018 book, The Plot to Attack Iran, How the CIA and the Deep State Have Conspired to Vilify Iran. This has been going on, Dan, for, I don't know, as long as I can remember, but at least this century, 25 years of Israel beating the drum to destroy the Iranian state. Iran has said for its part that it will not go down meekly, that it will take out the cornerstone of the Western democracies, the world economy, the oil fields of the region. It's last night said it would shut down the Hormuz Strait. That is the narrow gulf where closing the Persian Gulf. I don't know what the percentage is, but a vast percentage of the world's oil supply tankers through those straits. It looks, Dan, that we are reaching endgame here.
Well, I fear it. I think a lot of decent people fear it. You know, Tulsi Gabbard, I think about a week ago, talked about the potential threat of nuclear war. And I think at the time, you know, no one knew specifically what she was referring to. But I think she probably had some inkling that this war was impending. And, yeah, I mean, the problem is Israel has nuclear weapons. By the way, Iran does not. Israel, we know, has nuclear weapons. And there's a huge fear that they would use them. And if they use them, Pakistan said they would attack Israel with nuclear weapons. And then, you know.
That's been that claim has been walked back. There's some controversy about that.
Yeah.
I've always thought that a rogue element of the Pakistani military with control of some of their nuclear arsenal would be the most likely candidate for triggering a nuclear exchange.
Yeah, well, certainly the chance of someone coming in would be huge. I mean, if Israel decided to use a nuclear weapon, I think you would see major countries now get involved in this war. You would have World War III, I think. Again, that is being treated so nonchalantly by our leaders and by the press is just, I don't know, it's stunning to me, Chris.
Well, Dan, we're fast running out of time, but initially we were going to talk about your article up at Covert Action Magazine, Deportations, Repression, and the LA Uprising. I made some mention in the intro to people in the United States facing, if not the same degree, but also facing fear and repression at home. Los Angeles, I've been getting mixed reports from what's happening in Los Angeles. First, that it's not such a big, serious thing, and the other is, oh, yes, this is a very serious uprising. What's the truth of it?
Well, I think that it is a significant uprising. I think there have been huge demonstrations there. Mostly peaceful. There has been some violence, no doubt, and I mentioned that in my article. But I think in the end, as I'm seeing, I learned today, they probably have been effective because I see on Monday that Trump walked back his policy of doing immigration raids upon workplaces. And that's what triggered the L.A. unrest. So clearly the reaction to Trump forced his hand to pull back on that. So
and has the president, Dan, the president of the SEIU, the services or Service Employee International Union, David Huerta, he was beaten up by police. He was walking in one of the demos and arrested. Has he been released?
Yes. He was released, but he was released on bail, and he is still facing felony charges for basically just observing an ICE raid on workers, some of whom were SEIU members.
Well, Dan, this is in our final minutes here. I mean, I'm struggling, and I'm sure people around the world and in America too are struggling to try to figure out just what the hell is your president trying to do? Does he not realize immigrant legal and less so labor is the underpinning of the American economy, and especially the groceries and that poorer Americans, a growing number by the day, depend on? Does he not realize that waging war and supporting Israel's waging of war, the spear tip of American imperialism, I would argue, in the West Asia, is going to topple the entire world economy? Or is that somehow the plan? Is there some benefit for America to have the world economy in tatters at home and abroad?
Yeah, I think it's that you have a president who doesn't know much about the world at all, period. So I don't think he does understand a lot of these things. He has advisors who don't understand a lot of these things. I mean, you have a guy who's basically a real estate mogul, who wasn't even, by the way, very good at that. Who's not very intellectually curious. To have him with his finger on the nuclear trigger and other triggers is pretty worrisome.
Well, Dan, finally, if Trump were to say, okay, that's it, you know, I'm going to blow up Tehran, push the button, is there some hope that there would be people within the military chain of command that would break that order and not follow through? Is there a mechanism to contain an insane head of the executive?
I think there are mechanisms, and I do think there's a chance that there's people in the military who would push back on it. I think there is a lot of unhappiness in the military that they've been sent, for example, to LA to police their own citizens, which is not the job of the military. That's the job of the police. So there's always hope, you know, and I do have hope. But I think it's a very dangerous situation.
Well, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, a single commander of a Soviet submarine didn't obey an order to launch because there had been a misreport that America had launched against the Soviets. And that single individual likely is the reason you and I are speaking here today. I wonder if such an individual exists yet in America.
We can only pray so.
Well, Dan, it's always a joy to speak with you, despite the topics are never light. Thanks a lot for coming on again, eh?
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Thank you, Chris.
And remember Dan's book, The Plot to Attack Iran, How the CIA and the Deep State Have Conspired to Vilify Iran. It's one of Dan's many, many books. How do people order your books and find them?
Well, you can get it on Amazon if you want, or you could order it from my publisher, SkyHorsePublishing.com.
I'll put a link in the show notes. Thanks again, Dan, for coming on. I'm going to come back after the break with Andy Worthington from England. He's done a lot on the immigration issue in the United States, which is why I didn't talk so much about it with Dan today. But we'll cover it in the second half. Thanks again, Dan.
Thank you, Chris.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
Make the war material, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon. It's the way they mow the lawn, the last one to add to the mix. That's General.